You are Locked On Hawks, your daily Atlanta Hawks podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Hello, friends, and welcome to episode 364 of the Locked On Hawks podcast. I am your host, Brad Rowland, coming to you live deep into the night here on the, actually, we're into Wednesday morning as I record this, and the Hawks got a very, very surprising win on the road against the Utah Jazz on Tuesday night in Salt Lake City by a final score of 99-94. Just for a little bit of backup on this game, the Jazz entered this contest having won 21 of 23 games. They were arguably the hottest team in the league, at least on the short list, along with the Portland Trailblazers and, of course, the Houston Rockets. But Utah is playing fantastic basketball. Our defense has been lights out for quite some time, and the Hawks, of course, were shorthanded in this game as well. You know, Kent Bazemore, obviously, after the rest of the season, but John Collins also out for this game to start the road trip, and Atlanta entered as a 14-point underdog to the Jazz, but that did not stop Dennis Schroeder, who was by far the biggest story of the night. He absolutely exploded. We'll talk plenty about him on the podcast today, but you know, obviously, just setting the stage there for what was definitely a surprising win. Surprising that probably doesn't even do it justice. Probably qualifies as a shocking win, and one of those things that you only see a handful of 14-point favorites fall in the NBA every single year, and this was definitely one of those. So that kind of just sets the scene a little bit, and the Hawks escape with a victory, and obviously there are also some implications beyond the win itself when it comes to the draft that we'll talk about on the podcast as well. So welcome on to the pod, and here we go from Salt Lake City. Starting this game, Damian Lee actually got a start for the first time in a Hawks uniform. He started at the two over Tyler Dorsey. Dorsey was healthy and did play in this game, but that was a choice that Bud made to start the game and also to end the game. Lee also played crunch time, which is not a big surprise. I think he's been pretty good in the short time he's been in Atlanta. And frankly, Dorsey's not been great lately. He had some moments in this game. At the same time, though, Lee getting the start that was a little bit at least noteworthy. And Mike Muscala got the start at the four, less surprising there. With John Collins out of the lineup, he is clearly the second best big man available behind Dwayne Dedmon, so no big surprise there, but just a little bit of a note in the early going. The Hawks did have an early lead, and then after that, the Jazz took a 10-2 run to take the lead, and from there, it looked like it was going to be a lot of Jazz moving on, frankly. I thought that once they took control, they're probably going to hold on to control. That proved to be wrong, obviously. Atlanta's offense really struggled early on, but opening the second quarter, the Hawks had a 14-6 run. That gave them a two-point lead at that point in time, and Dennis Schroeder was huge in the first half. He had 15 points on 10 shots, and that first half pretty much got wherever he wanted against Ricky Rubio in this defense. And you know, Utah, I mentioned before, has pretty much the best defense in the league, at least over the last several games here. Utah's, you know, already an upper echelon defensive team, and it's been lights out recently, but Schroeder had no resistance to him, frankly, throughout the game, and did a lot of things that we'll be talking about here in the near future. But 50 points on 10 shots in the first half says it all. It was a huge part of Atlanta being able to hang around. The Hawks did go into the halftime break down by 1 point because Ricky Rubio actually got a lot of his points back offensively, and the Hawks didn't execute on the stretch of the first half. But an 82.7 offensive rating for the Hawks in the first half with 34% shooting and a 20% clip from three-point range. They were able to hold Utah's offense down, though, to 32% shooting, and that allowed them to go into the break down by one. The Jazz, though, quickly extended that lead to 10 points in the third quarter, and at that point, I definitely thought the game was going to be over because Utah's defense and what was a pretty slow-paced game. You do not necessarily see this becoming a comeback performance from the Hawks, but they were able to pull it off. There was a moment in the third quarter where Torian Prince and Joe Ingles got tangled up, and Prince actually had some blood, had to briefly come off the court, get some medical attention, but he proved to be fine. And actually right after that, the Hawks had a 9-0 run to get back within one, and a 15-3 overall run to take the lead, actually. Andrew White hit a three to cap that run. Utah did respond with 8 straight points after that to sort of regain control of things, but Schroeder was not going to be denied, frankly. He was the only player on the Hawks roster that was in double figures until about the 7-minute mark when Dwayne Dedmon joined him. That kind of tells you the story about what happened offensively in this game with Schroeder. But after a Dwayne Dedmon dunk and a Dennis three-pointer with about 3.5 minutes to go, the Hawks had a 4-point lead. It was a bizarre power play after that, though. Dennis Schroeder contacted Ricky Rubio's face after scoring a basket, sort of with a what seemed to be an unintentional move, and I think Rubio definitely sold it pretty uniquely, but he was given a flagrant foul at that point in time. That gave the Jazz 2 free points on free throws, and the Jazz then came down, got fouled, and tied the game on free throws, on additional free throws. So it was a four-point swing to have Utah tie the game. That definitely looked like it was going to be pivotal, to be honest with you. That was with 2 minutes to go, but from there it was even more Schroeder. He had a ridiculous shot to go up by two with 24 seconds to go. Joe Ingles missed two threes in the last about 30 or 40 seconds of this game, both of which were very open, and he's arguably the best three-point shooter in the league, at least for this year. Obviously, you probably have Steph Curry ahead of him, and maybe Kyle Korver. That, very short list. Joe Ingles is a fantastic shooter, and him having two open threes in this game was definitely something that the Hawks wouldn't want to happen down the stretch, but he missed them both. Also, Donovan Mitchell missed a bunny that was a potential three-point play that the Hawks sort of dodged the bullet on that one. He made both free throws, but in the end, Schroeder actually missed a free throw. In fact, if there was one Achilles heel for Dennis in this game, is that he missed four free throws, which is something he does not normally do. He's normally a lights-out free throw shooter, but he missed four, including one down the stretch. At that point, that set up the Jazz with a chance to tie the game. That was when Mitchell was fouled, and he actually made both free throws, but unable to do that. Torian Prince made two free throws from there, and Ingles missed another three in the corner that would have tied the game, and from there it was all Hawks as they run out the five-point lead. So obviously lots to take in there, and sort of the play-by-play aspect of the final stretch, but big picture stuff here. Offensively, it was a slog for everybody not named Dennis Schroeder, and at least to some extent Dwayne Dedman in this game. The Hawks finished off a win on the road against a quality team with a 97.6 offensive rating. They shot 40% from the field at 27% from three, a pretty ugly offensive performance. There's no real shame in that, considering the fact that Utah is so good defensively, but it kind of tells the story of how good the defense was and how bad Utah's offense was, probably more importantly in this contest. The Hawks held the Jazz to a 92.7 offensive rating, which is brutal in a lot of ways. 37% shooting for Utah and 6 of 34. Yes, 6 of 34 from 3 for Utah. It's 17.6%, and combined, Ingles and Donovan Mitchell combined to shoot 2 of 18. Those guys are their best shooters, and that's 11% from 3. That's pretty much the biggest, other than Schroeder's individual numbers, which were obviously fantastic. We'll talk about those next. The biggest stat of the night was Utah just missing all kinds of open shots, and that allowed the Hawks to escape with this win. So we can center back on Dennis Schroeder. He had a career-high 41 points, 7 assists, and 5 rebounds in this game. He played 35 minutes, 16 of 28 from the floor, 3 of 7 from 3, and the aforementioned 6 of 10 from the free throw line. He was the first Hawks player to score 40 points or more in a regular season game since Joe Johnson back on December 19th, 2009, and the first guy to have 41 points since 2008. It was also Joe Johnson. You will probably remember that Paul Millsap exploded for 45 points in a 2016 playoff game against the Celtics, but in terms of regular seasons, this is the first time in almost a decade in which the Hawks had a 40-point score, which seems unbelievable, frankly, for a team that was very good that whole time. But given the way that they had basically a lot of team ball in that stretch and no dominant number one scorer, not that surprising, I suppose. But Schroeder was lights out here, and all the more impressive that he did it against arguably the league's best defense. Schroeder should be praised roundly for the way he played. Obviously, you don't get to 41 points on your own without playing just fantastic basketball. He really had it going. Had some moments where he probably did too much, but that's what's going to happen when you have 41 points. And this will not be the show that I criticize Dennis Schroeder on. He was very, very good, obviously, in this game, and was almost single-handedly keeping the Hawks afloat for a long period of time. Defensively, had some issues. Rubio had 23 points of his own in this game, especially in the first half. I thought Dennis's defense was a little bit questionable, but that absolutely does not overshadow what was a fantastic offensive performance, and one for the ages for Schroeder, to be sure. Next on the agenda individually was Dwayne Dedman, the only other guy on the roster that I would tell you played a very good game in this spot. 15 points and a career-high 15 rebounds for Dedman. 29 minutes with 7 of 13 from the floor. Definitely picked up the slack a lot in the absence of John Collins on the interior. He was very good. He was by far the Hawks' best big man in this game, and the career-high in rebounds says it all. He also made a bunch of big-time buckets in that fourth quarter. I mentioned before, with 7 minutes to go, Schroeder was the only guy in double figures. That means Dedman hit at least 3 buckets down the stretch. And he was just in the right place at the right time. Did a really nice job against Rudy Gobert throughout the game. I thought Gobert did not play particularly well. You know, his numbers were good, 15 points, 16 rebounds. But I thought Deadman, I don't want to say outplayed Gobert, but he definitely played him too close to a draw, which is a huge win, given the fact that, Gobert is probably a top 20 player in the league. Deadman playing very well was another big part of the game. Obviously not quite as big a shooter, but without Deadman, they don't win this game for sure. Elsewhere in his, starting five, Torian Prince really struggled, honestly. 11 points, 3 rebounds, 2 assists, 2 steals. He was 3 of 13 from the floor and 0 of 6 from 3. Really crashed back to earth after that stretch of 4 games when he averaged 30-plus points per game. Not a huge surprise there, but I thought Prince at least competed and did not disappear. There, have been games this season where, he's not shooting the ball well, where Prince would just be floating out there. I don't think he was awesome by any means in this game, but the fact that he was not unplayable is a good sign, because a lot of my criticism early on in the season, especially in that mid part of the season when he was non-competitive in games where he didn't have it going offensively. This game, he was not shooting the ball well, but did compete and was able to be on the floor in crunch time and not be killing the Hawks in a lot of ways. And that's a positive, despite the fact that he's not shooting the ball well at all in this spot. Mike Muscala, 30 minutes of play, 8 points, 5 rebounds, 2 steals, and a block, was plus 7 in 30 minutes, 3 of 9 from the floor, 2 of 5 from 3. A pretty pretty quiet performance, but did his job pretty solidly here. The Jazz were without Derek Favors, which probably hurt them considerably here, but I thought Muscala definitely held his own against Gobert at times on the interior, and played very well in some spots. Obviously, you want him to shoot the ball a little bit better than he did with 3 of 9, but other than that, I thought he played pretty well. And rounding things out was Damian Lee, 5 points, 32 minutes, 2 of 6 from the floor, 6 rebounds for Lee. He actually is a college teammate of Donovan Mitchell, so that was an interesting sort of subplot storyline to this game. But I thought Lee was fine. It wasn't as if he did anything huge, but had a big bucket late when he got in the lane and kind of was almost forced to take a shot on his own. It was one of those things where you don't want to necessarily have the ball in his hands late in this game, but if you're going to play him, and the Hawks did, I think they like his defense more than anything, to be honest with you. But leaning on him heavily, Damian Lee playing 32 minutes is something that I never saw coming in this game, frankly. Even after it was announced that he was going to start, I wouldn't have projected 32 minutes, but he earned them. I thought he played pretty well here. Off the bench, a little bit less to take in, honestly. Tyler Dorsey was 3 of 10 from the floor in 20 minutes. 7 points, 5 rebounds, 3 assists, and a steal. Dorsey did some stuff that was encouraging in terms of just, outside of his scoring. That's always going to be the biggest part of his game, in my opinion, is just the way that he's going to be able to shoot and create a little bit. But pretty inefficient, obviously, here. I criticized him a little bit before the game, saying, I understood why the Hawks would go with Lee, frankly, because I don't think Dorsey's been very good for quite some time now. It's not a huge shot at him. He's a rookie. He's a second-round rookie, and most guys that are his age and his experience level are not good NBA players. He is not one of those right now, but at the same time, there have been some flashes, and you want to see him still have that investment. So the Hawks still gave him 20 minutes of play. I thought he did some positive things, even though he was not very efficient in those 20 minutes. Isaiah Taylor was not great here. 4 points, 2 assists, 1 of 7 from the floor in 20 minutes. I thought, obviously he was overshadowed by Schroeder. There were some 2-point guard lamps at different times in this game. I thought he was okay. 1 of 7 is not, going to be something I'm going to rip him for, and I thought he was okay aside from that, but nothing to be terribly excited about. Miles Plumlee, 2 points, 2 rebounds, 1 of 2 from the floor, pretty anonymous game, although he had one particularly egregious shot attempt. The one that he ended up missing was pretty funny to watch and take in. But other than that, Plumlee was pretty quiet. Andrew White hit a big 3, I mentioned before. He actually hit 2 threes in this game, 6 points and 8 rebounds in 16 minutes for White. So he was using his length appropriately, which is good. I thought he had some nice moments, pretty quiet other than those 2 threes. But I thought he was actually pretty solid when he came in there, and the Hawks had just recalled him. In fact, he's been doing the Erie to Atlanta ping pong in recent days to try to save some two-way days for him, because right now the Hawks actually need him available. But without blowing through all the two-way days, they're probably going to keep an eye on him. And that's one of those things where they're definitely gaming the system to some extent here. But until they absolutely have to, or until Erie bows out of the G League playoffs, they have to sort of keep an eye on the days given the system. So that makes complete sense there. And finally, Tyler Cavanaugh, 11 minutes of play, 0 for 1 from the floor, 2 rebounds, did not score, 3 fouls. Had some issues with fouls early on. I thought he was pretty quiet / ineffective in his time. That's probably why he didn't play a whole lot, frankly. They went small. They actually played Torian Prince at the 4 quite a bit in this game, at least when compared to their current baseline, which I'm fine with. I've always been a fan of at least trying that look. And with Utah without Favors, they were playing a lot of small ball as well, with Jay Crowder playing the 4 considerably. So I was cool with that. Prince is not necessarily uber comfortable in that role just yet, but I want to see the Hawks try that more and more, especially when they have a guy like Andrew White who has legitimate three size. So that's one of the big problems with trying to play Prince at the four on this particular roster is they don't have another guy to play the three. But with White around, they could probably credibly do that, and I was cool with them trying that in this spot. So all told, this will be referred to as Dennis Schroeder game for quite some time now. I have a feeling, 41 points on 16 of 28 shooting against the league's best defense is a pretty memorable game for Dennis. He got a little bit of a Gatorade bath at the end of the game during a post-game interview. So obviously the Hawks took full notice of the way that he played in the spot, made a ton of plays. And if he just made some free throws, he probably could have had 43, 44, 45 points if he just shot the ball the way he normally does at the free throw line. But I think the Hawks will definitely take that from Dennis, and a positive sign. As for the tanking race, I think a lot of the reaction after the game was justified in that the Hawks were not supposed to win this game. And as a result of that, every win can hurt you in the tanking race. I totally understand that. I will say, though, something I always say, or at least in the last couple of weeks, is that even the team with the worst record in the league has a 25% chance to have the number one overall pick. So a win does matter in this spot. I won't tell you that it doesn't. It definitely hurts the Hawks in terms of their trajectory towards the number one, towards the draft lottery and potential number one overall pick. But it is only one win. If the Hawks go on a run here and win, three out of four, I will tell you that definitely was going to hurt them even more. But winning one game, I'm not going to freak out in terms of that. Although I understand why the Hawks fans are at this point, especially because this is one that you definitely not see as a potential win. Thursday the Hawks play in Sacramento. That was the one that the Hawks seemingly could have stolen on this road trip, but now that they've won the first game of the five-game West Coast swing and they have a couple more remaining, it will be, I guess, important for the Hawks to not rack up too many wins here down the stretch. So we'll keep an eye on that. But I'm not freaking out just yet. I think a lot of people were saying, bye-bye DeAndre Ayton, bye-bye Luka Doncic tonight. I'm not going to go that far, because even if the Hawks finish third, fourth, fifth in ping pong balls, they still have a chance at number one overall pick. And frankly, coming into the night, I thought it was very unlikely the Hawks were going to have the number one overall ping pong ball allotment with teams like Memphis and Phoenix, who are just worse and probably even trying even less, and they're just more poorly coached. The Hawks are going to have to do some serious work to finish ahead of quote unquote ahead of those teams anyway. So a win does not necessarily have me panicking. It's just one of those things that you have to at least acknowledge at this point in the calendar. So takeaways: Dennis Schroeder was awesome. It was a fun game to just watch him do what he was able to do. And the Hawks, if you're a Hawks fan, you can't help but probably root for the team down the stretch there. I understand all the reasons not to right now, but it's a fun game when you go off and pull off an upset. You can hear the announcing crew getting excited about the way the team played. So it's just easy to take that kind of in. And it's that conflicted feeling, I'm sure, for a lot of Hawks fans. But a fun night of basketball, despite the fact that it was a low scoring, pretty ugly basketball game. But Dennis Schroeder having 41 points was something that I was not predicting, and it's always fun. You like that stuff about sports when you just cannot predict what's going to happen, and this definitely qualifies on a number of levels. So with that said, no podcast on Thursday morning as the Hawks have this back to back on Thursday and Friday. I'm going to wait and do podcasts on Friday morning and Saturday morning to recap those games. Instead, they're very, very late night contests. I think a lot of Hawks fans are going to miss those, so I think it's important that I break those down in my normal fun way to keep everybody abreast of what's going on. And as a result of that, we'll take Thursday morning off, so forgive me for that. But we'll still have five shows this week, and that seems to make a little bit more sense as they face the Kings on Thursday and the Warriors on Friday in a game that could feature Stephen Curry, which will be a little bit more interesting than you probably would have thought if the Hawks were playing the entire second and third unit of the Warriors. So with all that said, please stay tuned and subscribe to the podcast. Tell all your friends about the show if they like the Hawks, or if they just like sports, have them give us a chance. And if nothing else, we'll have plenty of basketball to talk about over the weekend, so stay tuned for that.